On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie.
My name's Caitlin.
Welcome to a very spooky episode of the Bechdel cast. I wanted the confidence to open with a spooky noise, but I did not. But welcome to the Bechdel cast. This is our podcast where we talk about the role of women in movies. Hey, why is it called the Bechdel cast?
Because it's inspired by the Bechdel test.
By Mr. Jerry Bechdel.
Jerry Tyrone Bechdel.
My man.
Just kidding. Alison Bechdel developed a test whereby two women in a movie have to talk to each other. They have to have names. First of all, they have to talk to each other. Their conversation has to be about something other than a man.
Is this too much to ask of any movie? Usually, yes.
You wouldn't think so.
But
you think it would just be really easy to write two women into your story and have them talk about a fucking sandwich or something.
Yeah. Hey, nice sandwich. Thank you. My name's Carrie. Done. Two women named Carrie talking about a sandwich. That passes the Bechdel test.
One of them spells it C-A-R-Y. The other one spells it C-A-R-R-I-E.
Yeah.
But still, this never happened. I don't know why I'm so angry so far, but I have a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
You never have a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
I know. We both have one.
For the record, I love when people who listen to the podcast tweet pictures of them drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade to us just to check in and be like, hey, we're supporting the brand that you've never received any financial support from. You just happen to be a fan of their product. And to you guys, I say, hey, thank you. Keep enjoying the Mike's brand. I know
keep
I will.
Keep tweeting at us with your photos.
Hey,
we love it.
Mike's Hard Lemonade, answer our tweets.
Please.
Send us a case. Enable us. Anyways, I got a nice cold Mike's Hard Lemonade in hand.
Yeah. Strawberry lemonade, baby.
Aristotle was giving us a hard time about it because he was like, isn't that the bad flavor? And it's like, well, isn't every flavor the bad flavor of Mike's Hard Lemonade?
So true.
Tastes like my problematic past.
Speaking of problem, no. Anyway, hey, let's introduce our guest.
Hey, I'm excited to talk about today's movie, and it'll explain the failed spooky motif.
We did a great job. But hey, before we talk about that, let's introduce our guest.
Yay.
We've got a terrific comedian, very funny lady. You know her from Girl Code on MTV.
And she's got cute dogs.
Cute
dogs.
We just saw Pink Server Dogs. Nicole Byer.
It's me.
It's you.
I love how the original segue was, speaking of problematic, we have a guest here.
I know, it didn't make any sense. I was like, this is a dumb transition.
And no, I liked it. And I wish you hadn't abandoned it. I wish you had doubled down. I'm like, this woman is a real problem. She got here 5 minutes late. She's bad. She's not drinking a Mike's Hard Lemonade. She is a bad potato.
Only because we didn't offer you one. We're the bad one.
No,
we
it's should've. Okay. I'm going to go to the gym after this.
Oh, you're a better woman than we are. We're literally going to get another Mike's Hard Lemonade after this, and that's the plan.
So we're talking about the movie Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first see the movie?
I don't remember how old I was, but I assume maybe like 8, maybe 7, maybe 6. I was very young. Mm. A lot of the things went over my head. But I just loved Whoopi Goldberg. I thought she was so funny in it. And then I loved Patrick Swayze. I was like, oh, man, he makes my downstairs quiver. And and then I just watched that movie so many times.
Would you say, is it one of your favorites?
It's my favorite movie.
Your favorite movie of all time. Hell yeah.
I love it.
I had seen it, I think, probably for the first time in college. Remembered the very famous pottery fuck scene.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Didn't remember much else about it. Many years passed, and then I rewatched it again for this episode, and I was like, oh shit, this is a good movie.
It's a great movie that would never get made today.
Right. No.
Yeah.
It is so, it's funny, it's scary, it's sweet. I love it.
It holds up.
It does.
I was a little nervous because I watched it with my mom, I think, when I was like a young teen, maybe 13 or 14. And I remember loving it and being like, maybe I was just a babe, but I was like, I was a little bit afraid of it, but I was also a little bit turned on by it. Like, it has everything.
It has everything you could possibly want.
But it's rest assured, it, like, it holds up at a pretty major. I was, like, so pleasantly surprised at how much fun it was to watch.
Same.
Yeah.
And if you just analyze it from, like, a storytelling, screenwriting standpoint, it's
a good story.
Really well crafted. Like, mm-hmm. You mentioned this movie would never be made today, which, yes, it would not. But also, a movie just came out called A Ghost Story. Starring Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck.
Oof. And the log line.
Speaking of problematic.
Jesus Christ.
The log line is, in this singular exploration of legacy, love, loss, and the enormity of existence, a recently deceased white-sheeted ghost returns to his suburban home to try to reconnect with his bereft wife.
Define white-sheeted ghost. Like an old school.
That's the movie poster.
Oh,
which shows
no.
Literal...
And wait. I bet you it's not a comedy, and it should be. Like, a woman turns around in her bedroom, and she's like, oh, a child ghost trick-or-treating right. in my bedroom?
Yeah. Yeah, that look is, up the
Is the movie
wild.
Casey Affleck covered in a sheet for the whole...
Maybe?
Wait, what is it
because
called?
Because that's
I
not the worst idea I've ever heard. I mean, I'm all for covering Casey Affleck in a sheet wherever he may be.
Right.
But wait, what is it called?
A ghost story.
A ghost story! Oh, man.
That's bananas.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it came out July 7th.
Okay, it has 87% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh.
I just...
Should we go see it?
Honestly, maybe we should go see it.
But... Let's...
Roger Ebert gave it 4 out of 4. I don't buy it.
He's not even alive.
Wait, really?
Yeah, he died. It was his website, probably.
Oh, I thought Siskel was dead. Are they both dead?
They're both dead now.
Oh, no. Who's reviewing movies?
No one.
Who's the other guy?
We are.
Who's the guy? Roper.
Oh.
Roper.
Al?
No.
Al Roker. Oh, fuck. I really confused the two people. Who's Roper?
Roper. He replaced Siskel when Siskel died.
Oh, yeah. So who replaced Ebert?
No one.
Oh.
You can't replace Ebert.
He's I wonder if they're like arguing in heaven, like, how come I got replaced and you didn't? And he's like, I'm irreplaceable.
But he sings it like that song.
To the left, I'm irreplaceable.
Dude, irreplaceable. Every time I hear irreplaceable, it reminds me of my freshman in high school history teacher, because that was when that song came out. She would try to connect with us by asking us to pass all our homework to the left,
boy.
And then would turn the song on while we would pass our homework.
What? An awful job.
What a terrible...
You have to try to... Like, she sat at home and was like, how can I get through to... Beyonce! Beyonce will help me teach the love of science!
Now I just need to develop a lesson plan that involves the left.
Oh, how sad.
Shout out to Ms. McCray. You did your best.
She did her best. McCray.
Anyway, Jamie, when did you first see this movie?
I saw it when I was probably around the Miss McCrae era. My mom sometimes would just choose a summer night to show us one of her weird, horny movies. This was one of them that she'd had on cassette. And then she's like, Jamie, I think that... Because she knew that I had a thing for Patrick Swayze. And she, for some reason, was like, that's good because you and Patrick Swayze have the same birthday. And my mom believes... Oh. Fun fact about my mom, she thinks... Everyone who has the same birthday shares a part of each other's soul.
Yes!
So she believed, because Patrick Swayze was alive at the time, she believed that Patrick Swayze and I had an August 18th connection and that I should see the movie. And I saw it and I loved it.
So me and Michael Jackson have a connection. Yes. We were both born on August 29th.
Yeah.
Both of your birthdays are coming up pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. Are you a Leo or a Virgo?
I'm a Leo.
Oh, I'm a Virgo.
I've been wronged by Virgos in the past.
Uh-oh. Well, I'll push you down the stairs.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Please, let's keep the trend going.
On my way out, I'm just like,
Your leg will splinter out of your body just like in The Beguiled.
Just like, oof, God.
I haven't seen The Beguiled. That doesn't pass the Bechdel test, does it?
I don't remember. It was such a terrible movie that I've blocked it from memory.
It's a wild movie, right? It's like set during the Civil War and there's no black people.
And there's,
The Sofia Coppola version.
And the original version, it's just like way more interesting and better, and it's not all white people.
Well, it shouldn't be. The Civil War era was like...
In Virginia!
Pretty just like, heavily black.
Fuck you.
I mean, granted, we were in the background picking up things, but like, just put us in there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Sofia Coppola is like, I don't know how. So it's only going to be white blondes.
Yeah, Sofia Coppola gave us all the shrug. And she was like, we don't know.
Wait, did she really? Was someone that, was she like asked about it?
She, oh, yeah. I mean, she very intentionally wrote out the only black character in the original version. Yeah, she's on notice. She's on notice.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
So she like had a, like a thought in her brain and she was like, oh, I'll just get rid of that problem.
her excuse was like, well, I don't know how to write a black character. It's like, well, then talk to someone. Do your job.
But also,
you dummy.
All you have to do, if they're not speaking in like the language of the time, you just cast a black person in that part. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, if she didn't know how to write slave talk, like, and if nobody else is speaking the way they spoke back then, you just write that character the way you write the white people and then cast a black person. That's right. Like when people are like, no, I don't know how to write women. Just write a man and then change his name from Jason to Allison, and then you have a woman.
You did it. Congratulations.
You did it. Very easy.
Everyone is horny and tortured, regardless of, Sofia Coppola is on notice.
She's on notice. Yeah. But let's talk about the movie Ghost instead.
Ghost.
Ghost is a fun movie that doesn't suck the way that Beguiled does. So I'll do the recap of Ghost. Molly Jensen.
Is married to Sam Wheat.
They're not married yet.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, they never get married.
They never get married.
Spoiler! Oh, no!
He dies
because
first.
He ghosts on her.
Yeah, he ghosted her. The ultimate ghosting.
He ultimate ghosted her.
But then, like, hung around. Yeah, he's like every fucking man of now.
Right, like, I don't want to be together, but I'm going to stare at you, and I'm going to follow your every move.
I'm just going to watch you.
I'm going to gaslight you.
And if another man comes in your house, I'm going to scare him away and follow him home.
I'm going to learn how to kick a can. I'm a man. I'm mad.
I think we pretty much already recapped it. Mm-hmm.
Love the kick a can scene.
The whole montage where he learns how to be a better ghost.
Oh, I love it.
Such a great montage.
Honestly, if someone knows how to do this, please put that whole sequence together with Mulan's Make a Man, that song. I'll make a man out of you. I would really love it.
There's also just like, okay, I know that we didn't even get one sentence into the recap, but there's so many fun one-scene character actors in this movie. The hospital ghost who presumably hangs out and waits for other ghosts.
No, he's waiting for his wife.
To die?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what he meant by that? Mm-hmm. Okay, because then he just watches a man die on the surgery table and is like, yeah, that's going to happen. You're just like, thank you so much. And then there's the scary subway ghost.
Oh, my God. That guy is incredible.
What a face. What a face on that
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
He's perfect.
Yes, he is.
You think I jumped? You don't believe me? They pushed me.
Which I guess.
Oh, the thing where he goes, I'd do anything for a
drag. Oh,
just one more drag.
Who are you? Who sent you? Who sent you? I love it.
Commits suicide again.
Jumps right onto that train.
But this time he's dead.
I love it.
Oh, wait.
Do you want to do the I'm so sorry.
No, I'll do it really fast. So Jesus Molly and Sam are together. They live in this nice new huge fucking apartment in New York City. How do they afford it? Well, he's a rich banker. Fine. They're out one night and they get mugged and he gets murdered and they think it's just like a random killing. And his spirit stays behind. He's a ghost now, but Molly can't see him. So he goes to a psychic, Oda Mae Brown, played by Whoopi Goldberg. And he starts to figure out that this murder was actually like an intentional.
But first, Whoopi is a psychic who's faking it the whole time.
Right.
So then Patrick Swayze, Sam Wheat, is giving like audio commentary like, give me a break. And then she's like, who is it? Huh? And her sisters are like, what's happening? And then he's like, say my name, Sam Wheat, say my name, Sam Wheat. And then she's like, and then she runs to a closet.
She goes, Sam Wheat.
And then she goes, Sam Wheat.
The door.
And then her sisters go, Sam Wheat.
Her sisters
They're so funny.
They're so good.
Oh no, she's talking to a white man again. We gotta call the doctor. It's so funny.
Yeah. It's great. So he goes to her to try to, because it turns out that she can actually like communicate with the dead, the spirits who
she has a crazy backstory. Like the more you learn about Oda Mae, you're just like, this woman has lived a very interesting life.
Yeah. So he goes to her to be like, can you communicate to Molly for me? Because I got to warn her that she's in danger, because he starts to figure out that he was set up and he was murdered intentionally because his friend, Carl.
Ooh, Carl was so hot.
Carl?
Oof.
Carl?
I suppose. He takes his shirt off. He's shirtless a lot in this movie.
I love Tony Goldwyn. I had my sexual awakening watching this movie. But then Oda Mae Brown goes to Molly after Molly like doesn't answer. And then she's talking to Molly. And then Sam's like, tell her she's in danger. And she's like, I'll tell her in my own way. She goes, Molly, you in danger, girl. It's another favorite line reading of mine.
It's so good.
It took me a while. It took me like till midway in the movie. I'm like, oh my God, it's Fitz from Scandal. And then I got horny.
Wait. He plays the president.
Yes.
He's
the president on Scandal. Yeah.
Tony Goldwyn knows how to age.
Badass, beautiful man.
He knows how to age.
I saw him once in the airport and I almost died. Oh, I don't get starstruck, and I don't think I was. I was just like, I want to open my pussy on your dick. I just love him.
Oh, God. He's great. You do get to see him shirtless, which I forgot if you did in this movie. And I was like, well, thank God
you
that
do,
was that time
You do, because he spills
capsule.
The coffee on himself. Because I think he's trying to seduce Molly, but I don't understand why he's trying to seduce Molly. Oh, no, that is diabolical. No, it's to get her on his side.
It's villain
shit.
So if
Oda Mae says anything, she's already slept with him, so she feels an allegiance to him. That's so fucked up. And I can't believe I've watched that movie 100 times and just now understand that. I feel very dumb.
No, I mean, it's not super explicit, but...
Perfect. Thank you. I feel better.
No. He's a manipulative...
That's what it is to me. Tony. It's just like turns out he is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to
hired
money.
Willie Lopez to not murder Sam Wheat, just steal his bank book with, like, codes in it because he's, laundering money. But then Willie Lopez couldn't get it, so Willie Lopez accidentally kills him. So then they're having a conversation. He's like, you murdered a man. He's like, I did you one for free.
Well, because at first I was feeling for Willie Lopez, but then at the end you find out when you see Willie Lopez go to hell, all the blood rises from the floor and it's like, oh, this man has killed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's got that bear claw tattoo. Mm-hmm. On the, like, it's like a teardrop tattoo.
Fun fact, Willie Lopez, I cannot remember his like real life name, but he's a comic. He was a stand-up comedian.
Rick Avilas?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was a stand-up and he was like pretty funny. I watched a couple clips.
Hell yeah.
Good for Willie. Interesting. He died in 95.
Yeah.
His Wikipedia picture is just a picture of him from Ghost.
Is it?
Yeah, it's literally like Rick Avilas, but also
I love it.
Willie Lopez.
Oh, that looks like the picture from when he's looking in the mirror when Sam Wheat makes it all foggy and writes Boo. I literally have seen this movie so many times.
That was one of the things that stood out to me, that scene when like Willie is like basically going through a series of rooms before he's hit by 3 cars at once. But they're like, the practical effects in this movie are really
great.
Like shit flying off the walls and the boo, and you're just like, fuck, this is like really, this is a well done ass movie. It was scary. I remember like that freaked me out when I was little.
The beginning scares me. When because they're in the new apartment, they're renovating it, and it's Carl, Molly, and Sam, and they're, like, hitting through this thing, and then, like, as, like, light happens, a big noise happens, and I'm like, oh! And it's not the scariest part of the movie.
No.
But I get it. It's, like, and it's kind of, like, foreshadowing, too.
Yeah, so he goes to Oda Mae. Oda Mae is like, your dead boyfriend, Sam Wheat, is communicating to you through me, and here's everything he's saying. And at first she doesn't believe Oda Mae, and then she starts to come around. She's like, hey, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But then meanwhile, Carl is manipulating her into being like, actually, no, you're crazy. You're not here. Like, ghosts aren't real. And then they start to just piece more and more things together.
She
goes to the police. They don't believe her.
And that woman said, honey, if ghosts are watching me every day, I'd never take a shower again. And then walks away. And I was like, you cunt. You're so rude.
Which is technically a scene that by our rules passes the Bechdel test.
Well, she doesn't have a name.
She's just an officer.
You're right.
She's not given a name.
Well, we'll get there later. One of the coolest things about this movie for me was the fact that, like, in most movies, it's very hard to identify what everyone's motivation is at every point in the movie. But for this, like, every main character is super motivated in a way that makes a ton of sense. Like, down to the fact that Patrick Swayze low-key kind of blackmails Whoopi Goldberg into continuing to work with him, and she has stuff at stake, and Demi Moore has stuff at stake because she, I mean, everyone around her is saying something different, and it would be so easy to just write her character as, like, this lady's grieving and she thinks ghosts are real, but, like, she's taking in all the information and doing the best she can, and she's being gaslighted by Tony freaking Goldwyn. And, like, it's just every character has, like, a very specific, it's so well done.
Each scene is like a sketch because each character has a game, and everyone plays their game, and it's like, if this is true, what else is true? Like, all of Oda Mae Brown's scenes, to me, are sketches. They heighten perfectly, and you blow out the world, and you get out, and then, like, the next scene heightens what she's doing. So, like, when I learned how to write sketches, I would watch Ghost a lot, because I was like, these are perfect. Like, especially when they're in the bank, and Sam Weed is whispering to Oda Mae, and she's like, why are you whispering? That is such a funny specific, because, like, she remembers she is talking to a ghost and has to do, like, X, Y, and it's my favorite movie. Great. I love it so much.
No, you're right, though. Like, if you just isolate every scene, it's just, like, every scene serves a purpose.
Yeah.
It heightens well. Yeah, everything. It's just a very well-crafted story. I'm kind of upset with myself that I didn't, like, revisit it sooner and pay more attention to it.
It works on every level. And the romance is really good, and I get it. And I love that Demi Moore sort of, I mean, for the most part, immediately before he dies, granted, but basically proposes to Patrick Swayze and is like, hey, I don't have any jewelry on me, but I think we should get married, you know, and it, and that's like...
I want to talk about that scene.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. I think the recap is done.
He's a ghost.
He's a ghost.
He gets murdered in a billowy burgundy shirt that he has to wear for the rest of his life.
How many shirts?
Tucked into his pants.
Yeah, do you, what happens? It's, what happens to the world if he untucks?
I don't know. It would explode. Or maybe he untucks and then it magically goes back in. That's the way he died.
And I like in that, the Santa Claus where he shaves off his beard and then his white beard grows right, back.
I love that the schizophrenic subway ghost is like, your shirt's not real. Your body is not real.
Yes,
but he references the shirt specifically. And it's like, thank you. I've been thinking about the shirt a lot. I mean, what a great outfit to die in.
For sure.
Yeah.
He wore it to the play. They went to go see Macbeth.
Another great.
And he fell asleep and he was snoring.
But anyway, so yeah, he finally convinces Oda Mae to help Molly talk to the thing. And they figure all the thing out. And the mystery, the murder gets solved. And then all the bad guys die, and then finally, Sam's spirit can ascend.
Molly, it's amazing. The love inside, you get to take it with you. And then he goes up to heaven.
Oh, I was weeping.
It's really touching.
It really is. And there was, and this was all, while I was watching the movie, because I love Swayze. We, after all, share each other's soul in a way, in an August 18th sense. But I did pause it at one point because every time I watch the scene between Patrick Swayze and Whoopi Goldberg, I'm like, oh, for sure they were real life friends. Like, you can just...
Yes, that's how she got the job. Patrick Swayze was like, I won't do this movie unless Whoopi Goldberg does this movie.
Yeah.
And then I read some article that Tina Turner was like one of the original choices. And then they referenced Tina Turner in the movie, but I don't know how true that is.
I didn't get that. I started reading. I looked up, and this is like slightly morbid. I'm like, I bet Whoopi Goldberg had a great, tearful public appearance after Patrick Swayze's death. And I watched what she said several days after on The View, and it was, check it out, YouTube.com.
YouTube.com? Yeah. I've never been to that website.
It's a new cool
what's
thing.
There?
There's some up and comers on
clips?
It.
Clips?
Yeah, just short clips of your favorite song.
Okay.
Throughout history and time.
Oh, I better get on it.
It's pretty cool. Whoopi Goldberg basically credits quite a bit of her success to Patrick Swayze's, like, vouching for her.
Yeah, she won a fucking Oscar for it.
Right, right.
And then became a legitimate movie star. And I can't think of another bankable black movie star like that.
I mean, she's one of a kind in every... But I didn't realize the role Swayze had. And, man, and she also said, fun fact, that Swayze loves to moon his co-stars.
Oh, no! I missed out. Oh, no.
She's like, whenever she was saying, like, she cited a specific scene where it's her and Swayze, and it's like the shots are back and forth between a tight shot on her and a tight shot on him. And she's like, whenever it was like a shot on just me, Swayze was off on the side, mooning me, making me laugh. What a goofball. What a warrior. Rest in paradise. And you're just like, fuck. They were good friends. That's
I love it. That makes me so happy.
Me too.
Because they have such a great chemistry together.
It's so good.
It's so much fun amazing. To watch them together.
I don't know. It makes me feel like a kid to be like, oh man, I hope they're really friends in real life. But it made me so happy that they were really friends in real life.
But okay, so I wanted to talk about that scene where she effectively proposes to him. It's right before he gets murdered, which is just more great writing.
Tight storytelling.
They never get a chance to get married.
Right.
But she's like, I want to marry you. I've been thinking about it a lot, and I think we should just do it. And he's like, well, you never wanted to talk about it. So the implication is that maybe he proposed, or maybe he was just like, hey, are we going to get married? Like, what's going on? And she's like, well, no. Like, which I like, because so often in movies and just society in general, this idea is put forth that if you're in a hetero relationship, women are just like, I can't wait to get married. I want to get married so much, and I can't wait till it happens. I just want to, I have to sit around and wait till he asks me, and I can't wait for that day because it's going to be the best day of my life. And just, so I like that she was the one who was like, actually, I don't want to talk about it. It's not important to me right now. And then finally, it was on her terms where she's like, okay.
She's like, I thought about it and I'm ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Molly is, you can like write her off as like just like this whiny, sad, widowed woman, but like she's pretty complex. She's got short hair, which is
the
like
the baldest woman is in charge.
Normal.
The loftiest rule.
And then she has her own business. She's like a pretty successful sculptor. She wears masculine clothing. She wears like overalls and stuff. But then she has like a soft feminine side, and then she proposes to her boyfriend. Yeah, like, I like her character. I like that she... And then, like, the fact that she did go to the police to talk about a ghost takes a lot of balls.
Right.
To be like, well, I mean, I don't know. This shit seems true. Let me fucking figure this out.
And she was, like, totally aware of how crazy she sounded. She was like, I know this sounds so stupid, but, like, you gotta hear me out.
And it was also the way that the scenes between her and Otome, and we'll get to also Patrick Swayze, play out was also believable, in that she does not respond to Otome the first time, because that was probably scary and confusing. But then eventually, I mean, that seemed like a realistic portrayal of grief, of like, okay, there's been enough specifics, and like, what do I have to lose by just listening to this person a little bit? And that sort of is like, and even down to like the shirtless Tony Goldwyn, the deceiver, that's a very common, and that was something that, and not to get personal, but like, that was something that resonated with me specifically, of like the deceased man's best friend trying to look out for not quite the widow, but basically the widow of his best friend. I feel like that's sort of a normalized thing of like, well, if his friend can't take care of her, then, you know, he'll take care of her. And I think that that's a creepy thing. And the reason that my Uncle Butch is in my life, and I hate Uncle Butch. But he's the Tony Goldwyn, except a liar and not hot.
Oh, no.
but anyways, it was even realistic how those scenes played out between the two of them, of like, you know that Demi Moore's character has really isolated herself from people. And Tony Goldwyn's one of the only people she really trusts and has a connection with, because she knew. And so even the fact that they might have hooked up if Patrick Swayze hadn't deployed
knocked over
his ghost
a picture
powers.
Of himself.
Right.
Remember me. Oh, and then also Carl was pushing Molly so hard to like get over it. I feel like that happens a lot when a loved one passes away. The people around you are like, you have to move on. And it's like, well, and I like that she like slapped him at one point, and she was like, no, Carl. And it was like, yeah, Carl, let her fucking grieve, even though I know that like you murdered her boyfriend. But like, if you hadn't, let her grieve.
You'd still be wrong, even if you weren't a murderer. Yeah. Oh, I'd like to propose a new movie rule that I noticed in this movie. The man in the loosest khakis is up to something. That before and well, because Patrick Swayze, who in their right mind would put a pair of loose khakis on Patrick Swayze? He's got the butt,
best butt,
the butt of the century. So he's in tight pants the whole time.
Oh.
But Tony Goldwyn, they like to put him in looser khakis.
Oh, did
maybe
they?
This, yeah,
I guess I gotta
maybe
go back and pay attention to that. You know what scene I really love? The elevator scene. In the beginning, it's like towards the beginning, they're like
Ooh,
in the
yeah.
elevator. They talk about how Carl needs to pay off his Mustang. They get in the elevator and then he starts coughing and he's like, the doctor says it's contagious. And I do that often.
Really?
in elevators. I won't do sickness, but when I'm in an elevator with my roommate, I'll look at him and I'll go, why won't you just have a baby with me? And he goes, now is not the time. And I'm like, please, when is the time to talk? John, I love you. And then he always like feeds into exactly what I want, even though he doesn't mean to. He'll be like, I'm never taking an elevator with you again. And I'm like, why are we fighting? And he's like, stop it. And then people are always like, oh, no.
Well,
oh,
my God. That's very funny. That's a great scene because it's basically, it's like it uses a diversion so that we won't suspect
yes.
that Carl mm-hmm. is this evil, malicious
they're
murderer.
They're showing
right.
how close they are.
Right.
The movie is really well written and very well executed.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. I was blown at how many different points. I'm like, wow, I forgot that part happened. And that's so smart.
Right.
And that's
because
so, every scene has a purpose. That mm-hmm. never happens.
Nope.
Right.
Never.
It's so famous for the pottery fuck scene,
mm-hmm.
which actually makes me furious because.
Ooh. But it's so horny.
It's so horny. She's sculpting a vase, if you will, mm-hmm. out of clay. And he puts his hand into it and fucks it up. And she's just like, ha, 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 it's okay.
He does say, I hope that wasn't
but
a masterpiece.
I feel like she did a good job of being like, huh, well, it's not now.
Yeah, right.
Because she does get a little terse with him. And I was like, oh, I like that. That's like a real relationship.
I would have like elbowed yeah. him in the face and been like, fuck you, you ruined my.
But then you wouldn't get to fuck. When I was right, little, right. I was like, why aren't their hands dirty? How did they? Did they clean? Did
well,
they
that's
wash
what
off?
What makes me furious?
That's
so they get all.
That's
they get all.
Movie
I know.
Magic.
I know. But
Come
I just.
On.
Well,
no one wants to see a tense scene of Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore washing their hands,
and they're like, "We're gonna fuck soon."
All right.
Even before that, when they're like getting their hands all dirty, and it's supposed to be very hot because they're running or their hands on each other and getting each other more clayed
all clammy.
Up. To me, that's so gross. I think sex should be in a sterile environment in a white room.
Oh,
with
Kaylee, we're not all gonna fucking. Pods.
Come on. Unchained what? Melody playing while their little fingies are touching.
In fact, I think no part of two people's bodies should touch during sex except for their genitals. I think people should just be far
just arms
far apart.
Out
yeah,
and just
like, no.
thrusting and receiving.
Yes, that is how I think sex should be. So this scene
here's a fun
depicts
fact.
Really gross. Yeah.
I asked my old roommate Evan to take my virginity and he said, okay, and he's gay, and I was like, okay, but I don't want you to touch me because that might change our relationship. So I was like, I will wear a crotchless leotard or like a snap crotch leotard,
yes.
and you can enter me that way, but do not touch my titties and do not touch my face and don't kiss me. We didn't end up having sex because I had too many rules. He was like, I can't just like do my thing, and I was like, no.
No.
Absolutely not.
You probably for the best.
There.
Yes, it was definitely for the best. It would have been fun for either one of us. You'd been like, I wish you were a man. I'd be like, I wish you were a straight man who loved me.
Well, anyway.
Everyone has their rules. The part where he says, I hope that wasn't a masterpiece, did make me laugh because I was trying to, like, in my head, I'm like, what if she had done, like, what if she was an oil painter and he just was like, hope it wasn't a masterpiece. Would you like to fuck me?
I mean, that's with any creative job. Like, imagine she was doing a stand-up show and he walked on stage and was like, mar, 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 mar. I hope you weren't trying to have a good set.
Yeah. Or if she was a surgeon.
Yeah,
he just came in and
just stuck his hand in a body.
Hope this wasn't a casualty.
he heckled her pottery.
But, okay, here's a plot hole that does bother me.
Okay.
He passes away. It seems like he's pretty well off. He's mm-hmm. doing well in his profession.
Mm-hmm.
There's a promotion on the table, etc. They just move into this really nice apartment. Are we to expect on a potter's salary she can afford this apartment by herself.
Life insurance. And then
good point.
They do packages when people die. They give you a bunch of money to loved ones when you have a good job. And then if they had like sold any assets, so like if they each owned a home and sold it or whatever, she would get the money from his house.
So it could work.
Yes,
it could
absolutely
work. Okay, cool.
Yeah, dead people with good jobs usually take care of you.
Okay, because I was like, I didn't want her to move, but I was just like, how right, valuable is this pottery?
That's a great apartment.
They live in New York and she has like a studio.
Also, remember, it's the 80s or that's the early 90s. Early 90s, I think. 92?
90.
And he 90. Works and he works in finance in some way, so we're to believe he like has money.
He has money.
Okay, right. That brings up a point I wanted to talk about. He never offers to nor pays Whoopi Goldberg's character for all of her services.
No.
He should be like,
but aren't they on
you...
like a mutual kind? I mean, no, a ghost can't pay you.
Well, he could have been like, hey, Molly, throw her a bone. But I think she's going to be fine because she can hear ghosts and she can charge more.
I suppose.
Because remember when he goes back and she was like, I got ghosts from New Jersey coming in.
Business was booming.
That woman was just like, where's the money? And then that man jumps in her money. What did you do to your hair? Do you like it? It's autumn sunrise.
That was so good. That was like, I wrote that one down.
It's very funny. But I think she... because he did help her. He showed her that she can speak to dead people. Mm-hmm. So then she will always be busy and she can charge so much money.
Sure. I think that he should have offered to pay, especially because he kind of teases her with like, you're going to get
he doesn't tease her.
$4 million.
He didn't know how much money he was murdered for. He just knew it was money.
Yeah.
So then that's why when the guy goes, oh, you're taking out $4 million. And she goes, $4 million? Say yes. Okay. Say yes. How would you like that? Teens and 20s. Excuse me? A cashier's check. I think a cashier's check is best. I love it.
Also,
I
want her outfit that whole scene.
Oh,
you're
it's
like,
perfect.
Ah, it's so
it's
good.
It's perfect. And she's like, you don't like my outfit. He's like, no, I love it. I love it.
It's great. Don't change. Never
Nicole,
change.
I want to see your one woman show where you just reenact the entire movie of Ghost.
I mean, if they ever do a remake and I am not cast in it, I will literally end my life. I love it so much.
I just got overwhelmed.
Well,
I mean, and also we haven't talked about Otome's first outfit with the fun when her sister opens. Oh, no one's in the door, and then they open, and Whoopi is
in
a
orange
metallic robe.
Thingy. Or no, is it bronze or
is it
maybe the closet is orange?
Maybe, but she's in a metallic, like golden,
yes,
orangish robe, and then does this amazing. Oh God. And then Patrick Swayze, as most scenes in the movie, lurking.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Swayze really mastered a resting expression in this movie.
Resting
because he
lurk
had
face.
To. Just like, yeah, but in a way that was very, you're like, you know, he really is listening.
Mm-hmm.
He really is listening in that beautiful burgundy shirt.
Billowing.
Very billowing.
Billowing. So we talked a lot about Molly being a pretty... you know, complex character.
Well,
she's a little boring, especially when you compare her
to everybody else in the movie. She has she's working with a lot. Like growing up, I'd be like, ugh, Molly. But then like, as I got older, I was like, oh no, she was literally dealing with the love of her life dying and trying to figure out this woman who says she can hear him. And then a best friend who's like, it's okay. Come on, touch my body. And you know, it's a lot. And she's got a new house. It's a lot. She's dealing with so much.
True.
And she's still, and she continues working.
Also, they renovated it. It was a fix. It was like, just like an empty space. Yeah. So I'm sure they got it very cheaply.
Great time to die, Swayze. Renovating is stressful. Yeah, I was not like particularly impressed by her. Like, because everything she does in the context of what happens in the story makes sense. And her reactions pretty much universally make sense to me. But things are usually happening to her versus her doing things. Like, she goes to the police, but that doesn't really yield anything. It's mostly I feel like most scenes we see with her, she's receiving information.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's like, you know.
Which makes sense because she's not really, Sam Wheat's the protagonist of this story.
Sam Wheat. You could argue.
Right.
Sam Wheat.
So it makes sense that he's the one driving the story. So the fact that she does pretty much anything that influences anything is good, because often women in a story are just there as a set piece, really. Just, oh, I look hot and I'm here to look at, and yeah, and that's all I have to
do. The women in this movie are treated well, I think.
I think so too.
They're well written and they serve a purpose. Like, even that cop being so nasty sets the tone of how Oda Mae is going to be treated in that scene. Mm-hmm. Because then the other cop is like, we have her file. And it's like, oh, no.
And then it makes the audience even start to, not even doubt, because we know what's happening.
Yeah, we know, but then you're like, oh, shit, this may not work out because Oda Mae has a record and Willie Lopez is clean.
We understand why Molly then might start to question her own reality of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, fuck. So it's like really a great victory when she starts to believe Oda Mae again. Because we see, like, she used to fake IDs. Mm-hmm. She's a con artist.
Everything makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's
we're so horny for this movie.
It's such a good movie. So I can't remember who I just watched it with, but they were like, yep, holds up.
Yeah.
It does. I have some fun behind the scenes facts about Ghost.
Tell me. I wonder if I know them.
So in terms of possible casting, Demi Moore's character could have been Julia Roberts.
No.
Right. Which would have made sense for the time, but thank God. Harrison Ford was the original pick.
No.
But then, and this really brings The View in and brings Whoopi back, you know, but I guess the director or the writer, I forget exactly which, saw an interview with Patrick Swayze where he openly cried about the death of his father, and they were like, wow, what a hot man being sad in public. We've got to have him as Sam Wheat. And so that's how Patrick Swayze got the part. And then Patrick Swayze, I guess Oprah was the original pick for Oda Mae. Yeah, and they really wanted her, but Patrick Swayze was like, you've got to cast Whoopi, and then Whoopi had this amazing career.
Oprah would have been just so different. I don't know if that role would have been funny.
Right. I don't think so.
And that's the thing, is I did not realize, because I just didn't have, like, I didn't recognize the name, but I feel like the reason that Whoopi works so well in this movie and is, like, directed so well, and that this movie has so many funny moments is because it's the same director as Airplane and The Naked Gun.
Oh.
Which I didn't know. There's, like, just, like, a bunch of famous older comedy movies.
Yeah. What a versatile director, that guy.
Weird.
Who directed it?
Jerry Zucker. Jerry Zucker, yes.
Yeah. And then Robert Zemeckis, I think, was a producer on it.
He was involved. Ooh, yeah.
And he did Back to the Future, which is another favorite movie of mine.
Mine too.
It's a wild movie.
It's my all-time favorite movie.
I just watched it last night.
Really?
I watched that. There's like five movies that I will watch forever.
I can do what you're able to do with Ghost, basically reciting the entire script, all the dialogue. I can do that with
Back to the Future. Such a great movie.
Mm-hmm. Another very well-crafted story.
Anyway. Is it? It's a wild story.
Well, the first one, like, there's so much plant and payoff in that story, and just like, every little detail gets paid off later on. Like, it's so...
I like the third one better than the second one.
Honestly, the second one kind of sucks. I like the second half of the second one.
The second half of the second one is good, because when he goes back to 1950. Mm-hmm. And then the Wild Wild West, that's fun. I like it. That was
like
a fun little romp.
I like Back to the Future 3.
Yeah, it goes 1-3-2 for me.
Mm. Fair.
I've got another fact about Ghost.
Please,
tell us.
This is fun and sort of speaks to what we were talking about earlier of just write a female character. Originally, Oda Mae was written as a white male psychic character.
Yuck!
The first draft of this movie. Right.
Ew! I don't think I've ever met... Oh, no, that's a lie. Well, no, he read my tarot cards, but like he was...
Really? I've never had a straight guy read my cards. Weird.
Yeah. Ugh. In New Orleans. It was very strange.
That is, how did he fall into that?
It was very bad. I handed him all the tarot cards upside down somehow, because he was like, hand them to me any way you want. So I twisted a bunch of them around, and he went, huh, I don't know what that means. And I was like, you're bad at this. You're very bad at your job.
Straight men should not be allowed to read cards.
No.
First of all. They just shouldn't.
Honestly, you shouldn't be allowed to do anything in society.
They're on notice.
Let's ban them from...
Goodbye.
But apparently, Oda Mae was written as a white male character, and then the writers of Stand By Me for some reason there was some sort of conversation.
You mean that movie with almost exclusively straight white men in it?
You know, suggestions come from strange places sometimes. But they suggested, hey, that's an interesting character. What if it was a woman? And then the writer wrote Otome and the world was better off. It's really not that difficult. And in fact, usually your output will benefit from another good female character.
Do you think Molly and Otome Brown retain a friendship and go, remember that ghost?
Okay.
Do you remember
Can we talk about
haunted us?
The Molly Otome scene that we as an audience don't get to see?
Oh, man.
Where is that?
I would love to watch that.
You mean the one where
Otome lets Sam use her body and then they like dance and I think kiss, right? No.
Almost, just, but I mean, it's intimate.
It's very intimate. But you get the beginning with Otome's red fingernails as they, like, intertwine.
So you know that this is the deal. Like, it's not just, like, they're closing their eyes. And, like, they're making physical contact and then cut to, and the scene that I, like, very clearly remembered was, the, like, you know, like, Swayze and Demi reuniting, and it's beautiful, and you're crying.
But you just gotta know, that's really Whoopi Goldberg.
I forgot that Whoopi is the one. And then you see, at the end of that scene, there's a very quick shot of them, you know, because then Tony Goldwyn's like, hey, I'm about to die. And then, and then you see them, like, physically separate. So you're like, oh, that all happened.
Yeah.
Why not just intercut some of it for us?
Right.
And I was like, oh yeah, Whoopi and Demi are the same height. How did it work?
Mm-hmm.
How did she nestle her sweet little head?
You gotta just suspend that disbelief.
Oh, I did want to see that though.
Well, that brings up another point where men are always trying to control women's bodies. They're always trying to enter you. And the scene
She
gives him consent.
She does, but earlier she did not give consent.
Orlando did not get consent.
That old ghost.
Orlando, do you like my hair? Oh, God, I forgot his name was Orlando. Orlando, you can't be jumping into bodies. You know that wipes you out.
Right. I love that's a rule that this movie establishes.
Yes. And yeah, then they follow it.
And it pays off later on, because then Sam's like, I'm too tired to go and fight.
And then those girls get in trouble, but then you hear, and he like pushes Carl up.
And then all the ghosts. I liked in that big scene where suddenly Otome is an actual psychic, and now there's like a million people in her room. All the ghosts are friends.
Mm-hmm.
And
they all know each other.
Out. But then there's weird, like, it's just like the regular world where there's like the scary schizophrenic guy who hangs out at the tracks. But there's also a community that you can hang out in. Like, there's all sorts of people. Here's a question, and I don't know the answer. It's not a trick. Are there any female ghosts in the movie? We see a lot of dead husbands.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of hard to tell in that scene
because at Sam Wheat's funeral, he sees a ghost who walks through the grave.
Right.
And then when she tells all the ghosts to get out, I believe I saw someone in a skirt walk through the wall. But there are no like real female ghosts who have a effect on the movie.
They don't have lines.
They don't get Orlando moments. And I'm glad Orlando, because that was like one of my, that made me laugh really hard.
I was annoyed that he like, without Whoopi's permission, enters her body, which is like, can we call it rape? Maybe. But not.
Ghost rules are confusing, which I always wanted to talk about.
Ghost rules are confusing.
I loved the first time Patrick Swayze, someone like walks through him with their guts, and you're like, no, Patrick Swayze can see poorly rendered 1990s body animation. What a curse.
I forgot that happened.
And I love that he was so scared to go through. He'd be like, oh no. And then he leaps through the door, and he's like, and he like looks back at the door and is like, yeah, dude, you're a fucking ghost. What don't you get? And then when he goes to the turnstile for the first time, and he like stops and like looks back, and like, you're a ghost. Keep going.
He's new. He doesn't know the rules.
It's so funny.
He lives with wonder
every single time.
Whenever he sticks his head through something, he's like, is this safe?
And you're like, you're a goddamn ghost. You are fine.
You're fine. There's a lot of great Swayze reaction shots in this. When he finds out Carl is betraying him the first time.
I thought you were my friend.
Right. But first, that long shot of just Swayze's eyes watering, like, but I thought friendship was forever. Like, it was so beautiful. Oh, this movie is so fun.
It's I love so Willie Lopez. Some woman knows where you live. A lot of women know where I live.
Can we talk about the like climactic sequence at the end whenever Carl's like banging on the door, mm-hmm. he breaks in, Sam is all weak because he's just been inside of Oda May, and then Molly and Oda May are kind of like left to fend for themselves for a few minutes, and they go up to the roof, and there's a moment where Molly tackles Carl.
She like gets when, on his back.
Yeah, like Carl's kind of attacking Oda May. Molly attacks him.
Kind of.
Oda May gets away, but then he holds a gun to Molly's head. Then Sam needs to save her. Mm-hmm. It always bugs me when a man needs to save a woman because it's a trope that happens again and again.
Yes. But I do think those women were smart enough that they could have saved themselves if given enough time.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too.
I think they could have figured something out because I do think they were strong women. But yes, then Sam comes and he flicks the gun away and then he pushes Carl. And then, I mean, Carl kind of kills himself.
He does, because he flings that
hook, and it hits the window, and then the glass falls down and impales him. And then his little fingy wipes down the window, and he's like, ugh.
His death is, like, hilariously gruesome.
It's very gruesome.
That most scared me the first time I saw it. Like, Carl's, I remember having dreams about it, because it was so... It's weird with this movie because they do like get a shit and a fuck in there every once in a while that they don't need to, and they don't need to impale him like that, but I'm so glad that
they
did.
No, but I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
And then when he like comes up from his dead body and he's like, "Hey, Sam." And it's like, "What? You can't No, you know what just happened."
Right. We're not cool.
What? No, you guys can't be friends now that you're both dead. And he's like, "Oh, Carl."
And then the little demon.
The little dementors get him. And he's like, "Bye."
Black gremlins.
Those things scared me when I was little. I was like, "I hope they don't get me in my bed."
Yeah. They're just little dementors.
Yeah.
Then they make that noise. And my favorite part is when Willie Lopez gets hit by three cars and then they like show him dead and then you hear in the background, "That dude is dead." And it's obviously an extra who is just like, "Someone needs to say it. I'm going to say it. I'll say it." And he probably said it every take and someone probably was like, "Hey man, don't say that again." But then they saw like the dailies and were like, "Oh no, that's great. We have to keep it
you
in."
You know what? This guy's getting his SAG card.
I was just going to say, he probably got his SAG card from
that. That dude is dead.
He went from being a featured extra to a
fucking speaking role.
Yeah.
It's
good for him.
Perfect.
Good.
Can we talk about how... Okay, so it's implied in the movie that cats can see or sense ghosts. Because Sam Wheat figures it out, and then he uses it to his advantage to scare off Willie Lopez. So I would just like to, for the record, just remind everyone that cats do have 8 nipples and they can see ghosts.
They have 8 nipples?
This has been Cat Facts with Caitlin. 8 nipples, ghosts.
Wait, I've held cats.
You didn't realize how many nipples you've grazed.
It was a boy cat. Do boy cats have 8
That
nipples?
Was your question.
That my question?
Yeah,
by it.
All mammal, male, female, gender non-binary animals and people, all mammals have nipples. Because all embryos start out as female and grow little nipples.
Okay.
And then a certain hormone is introduced in the womb to determine whether or not it ends up being
biologically
male.
It's probably like a litter of kittens thing. Like cats tend to have so many babies at once that they need more nipples.
Right. There's a direct correlation to like how many offspring a mammal has at a time to how many nipples they have.
So we're only twins. 2 little nippies?
Yeah.
You should be double fisting.
Honestly, humans should only have 1 boob.
Imagine.
Because we only have usually 1 baby at a time. So
interesting.
I'm going to campaign for a 1 boob movement.
A 1 boob movement.
Well, then I should have no titties. I don't want babies.
Me either.
They really upset me.
I want to pull my boobs and have 1 good one.
Just 1 great tip.
I want to have 1 D cup. instead of 2 little midgets.
No.
Listen, it's fine. It's manageable in the heat. I accept it.
I mean, yeah, big old titties in the heat. That can't be fun.
Right. I want like big old titties in the winter.
Yeah, but they keep you warm.
This time of year, I'm grateful. This time of year, I count my blessings.
Yeah. Well, this has been a very enlightening discussion about boobs.
Nip talk. Nip talk.
Well, that's the new name of this podcast.
There we go.
Hey, let's talk about whether or not Ghost passes the Bechdel test.
I've been holding this back, but I think it does. I think it technically does.
Okay. Argue your point, please.
Well, I wrote down a few different places. You're right. I didn't think that the police scene doesn't pass because the officer doesn't have a name. Mm-hmm. Do we ever find out Otome's sister's names? Because there's an exchange that passes.
Yes. I do not think they do have names.
They do have names? I by the time it occurred to me that I should have known their names, it was too late. And
you are right, because they have a conversation about Arsenio Hall. Oh, wait, that's a man.
By our rules, they just have to have, there has to be two lines of dialogue where they talk about something other than a man. Yeah, and they talk about Otome, and they talk about, like, I don't have the quote in front of me, but they're like, oh, she finally got the power or whatever. And then there's a response that also has to do with Otome. And I wish I had written down the exact exchange.
Oh, I think I have, because I detailed all of these.
They technically don't have names.
They don't. Okay.
They are credited on IMDb as Otome's sister and Otome's sister.
So those scenes where there are women interacting, it starts off with Otome and Mrs. Santiago, who does have a name, but they talk only about Mrs. Santiago's dead husband, so that does not pass. Then we've got Otome and her sisters during the scene where Sam is all like, I'm a ghost and you can hear me, and now you have the gift that you didn't think you had. Her sisters are like, oh, she's talking crazy. She hit her head harder than we thought. The other one's like, she was talking to nobody before she even hit her head. So that would pass the test if we knew their names, but we don't.
Right.
Then we've got Otome calling Molly on the phone to be like, I'm a spiritual reader and I have a message from your friend Sam. Doesn't pass. Sam. Talking about Sam. And then the scene where Otome goes to Molly's apartment, same thing, doesn't pass because they only talk about Sam and all the things, like, because she's trying to convince her, I've got your dead boyfriend here. Then we've got the cop who is the woman who is all like, I'm never going to take my clothes off again if there's ghosts everywhere.
No name.
We don't know her name. Does not pass. And then we've got Otome in the psychic shop talking to another lady who's trying to communicate with her dead husband. They either only talk about a man. Either way, that woman is not named.
I have like a sneaking feeling that there is, and I wasn't doing the close enough notes that I should have been doing, but I do think that there is an exchange in this movie somewhere that likely technically passes, but I don't think that
you mean is between like Otome and Molly?
Yes,
probably, but I think it happens. So
they always talk about Sam.
But if I mean, but even if there's like an exchange of lines between them of like, do you believe? Yes or no. Like, that is the type of exchange that would pass.
Right.
I don't know.
It would be, but it would be so fleeting.
Right. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, and it's one of those, if it does pass, it's barely.
Right. I think this does pretty right by its female characters. I think they're both well developed, and because, like, Otome is just such a, like, dynamic character. Mm-hmm. Just, like, she's so fun and fun to watch. And Molly's also, again, she's dealing with a lot of shit, but she's serving the story. So I think the movie treats its female characters well, but I don't think it passes the Bechdel test, because every conversation where women are talking, they're either not named or they're talking about Sam.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my stance. But as we've...
If only Swayze weren't such a lurker.
Right. Or if we just got maybe like a scene of aftermath after Sam goes to heaven and then Otome is like, well, it was nice meeting you.
Do you want to get some ice cream?
You owe me money. I did a lot of work for Sam and please give me $100. That could pass the test. And also she would get the money I feel she's entitled to.
And I don't think that Demi would be stingy about it.
No, she'd be like,
and also, here's a weird piece of pottery I made, if you want.
I mean, she helped save her life. Demi was going to get murdered by Willy Lopez otherwise. Yep. Mm-hmm. So,
or Carl.
Or Carl, yeah, one or the other. But as we've often mentioned, the Bechdel test isn't necessarily, like, it's not the end-all, be-all. Like, if this movie does pass the test, it's great to women, and if it doesn't, it's bad. Like,
there's a lot of shitty movies that pass, like, the Bechdel test.
It's true. Like
what?
The Beguiled!
But aren't they... Oh, I guess they're not constantly talking about Colin Farrell.
There's, like, three scenes where they're like, let's talk about our French lessons.
I'm gonna...
Here's a fun one that passes. Sister Act.
Ooh. Yes, and I love that it's there's a real Whoopi Goldberg career foreshadowing ghost where they're like, give the money to the nuns. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, nuns suck. Mm-hmm. Or some variation on that. Nicole probably knows the exact line.
Give money to a bunch of nuns? They can't even, I don't remember.
Something like, they can't even buy panties or bras.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
No, that was a great, like, ending line to a scene. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Always end on a button.
I'm trying to think of my other favorite movies, and if they pass...
Chances are, probably not.
To Wong Fu passes.
Thanks for everything.
Julie Newmar.
Well.
Let's see, My Cousin Vinny does not pass.
I wouldn't think so. I haven't seen it in a long time.
I think Marissa Tomei is the only female character who speaks. I don't think there's another woman for her.
I've not seen it, but that sounds about right.
Eddie passes. Another Whoopi Goldberg movie, Eddie. That passes. Because she has a friend, and they talk about basketball. A nice white lady.
I like how this movie, I mean, there's not a whole lot of, like, tackling race in this movie, but there's a few different lines where Oda Mae will be like, you're a white guy, aren't you? Like, mm-hmm. And then she sees a picture of Sam, and she's like, oh, you're cute for a white guy.
But white. Yeah, and then...
Oh, yeah, the line where she's basically like, I wrote down when Whoopi Goldberg's like, are you white? And then she says, like, literally, like, a white guy, why me? It's
like... It doesn't truly tackle race, but it does tackle that, like, she lives in a bad area.
Right.
And a murderer lives in her neighborhood. And this white guy's very concerned about his white... fiance who lives in a good area. So I think it doesn't tackle race at all, but it does tackle, like, she's like, oh shit, like, there's bad shit happening in my neighborhood and I'm helping out this white man, like, you're dead.
Yeah. I think let's rate the movie. We rate each movie on our nipple scale.
Okay, nipple scale of 1 to 8.
We should adjust it for cats.
For any movie with a cat in it, we should. No, but we do on a scale of 1 to 5 nipples. No animals have only 5 nipples unless maybe they started out with 6 or 8 and some of them were surgically removed.
Sliced them off. Ooh, boy, I would hate having my nipples removed.
Yeah,
I give it 5 little nippies. It's literally my favorite movie in the whole wide world.
But we rated on our it's portrayal of female characters.
Yeah, I stand by it. Five little nippies. I think the women are great in the movie.
I'm going to give it 4. It gets some marks off. I don't like that the women have to be saved by Sam at the end. That's a trope that's always going to bug me. It's still Sam driving the story. It is. He's the protagonist, so that makes sense. But I feel like maybe, I don't know, Molly could maybe have a little more to do, or because she is kind of passive. There's also a scene where Willie Lopez is, like, watching her undress, which I guess, like, sure, that's... to communicate to the audience, she's in danger. This is scary. But also,
then Oda Mae tells her,
"Yeah,
he watched you undress and whatever."
But that scene, like, didn't really need to happen. Like, why do we have to see, like, a voyeuristic naked lady scene? She's not. She's.
I also think it paints how gross Willie is.
Yeah, but and then he gets scratched by a cat. Which does have 8 nipples, so
that's true.
Everything's
so in
fine.
A way, it's an 8 out of 8.
But yeah, I think that Molly and especially Oda Mae are just really interesting, multi-dimensional characters that are enjoyable to watch. And there wasn't any moment where I was just like, ugh, I don't like this. There are opportunities where it could pass the Bechdel test,
right?
But the whole thing is about a man. Their relationship, Oda Mae and Molly's relationship, is completely contextualized by this man.
Mm-hmm.
So if they talked about other stuff, would it make sense for the movie? Maybe not. But I don't know. Just throw a line in there. Oh, did you watch Oprah yesterday? Yeah, I loved it. How about you?
Too bad she didn't get this part. Yeah, well, that's going to happen. Yeah. I'll give it a 4-2 based on, the two main female characters are both, and I wouldn't have said this for Molly the last time I saw it, but after seeing her this time through, are both really well developed and have very clear, strong motivations, and their storylines, although they are propelled forward by men, they seem like two independent women with heads on their shoulders and deal with problems in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically just the one nip off based on missed opportunities, and less so having to do with Otome and Molly, because I feel like it would be disingenuous to the story if they like ended up being best friends. Like that sure. That would not mm-hmm. happen in real life. But missed opportunities more in terms of it would have been very easy to give Otome's sisters names. It would have been yes. very easy yeah, yeah, to yeah. not have almost all male ghosts. It would have, you know, it would have been very easy to flip one of Otome's clients into a man trying to talk to his wife. You know, like,
sure.
like they're just little stuff like that. Four nipples, I'm going to give two to both of Otome's unnamed sisters.
Yeah, I do like that of the women with speaking roles in this movie, they are almost all women of color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's Otome, her sisters, Mrs. Santiago, mm-hmm. Molly's kind of the only white woman.
Yeah, and you don't see very much of her world, which is like interesting. Like you get that, like, Sam's a Wall Street broker or whatever, but then, like, they spent a lot of time in Brooklyn, in Prospect Park, I think is where it would be, like,
right.
which was, like, not just gentrified. So, like, everybody on the street is a person of color. Like, it was...
On the subway, too?
Yeah, on the subway. The like, I like, think they did a great job of depicting New York in 1990.
Because so many movies
will be
set...
in New York, and they'll be, like, in Brooklyn, and it's, like, filled with white people. I'm like, I don't know... where you are, but now I do. Now it's any part of Brooklyn.
Sophia,
very gentrifying.
Sophia yeah. Coppola, take some fucking notes.
Yeah.
Oh, Sophia, how dare you have a Civil War movie without somebody being like, here's your tea.
It's
like, come on now.
Crazy.
Nicole, thank you so much for being
hey,
here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's been a blast. Where can people find you online?
Listen,
on Twitter and Instagram, at Nicole Byer for both. I have a Facebook page because I had a show on MTV called Lucy Exactly Nicole that got canceled but is being resurrected by Facebook.
Ooh.
So you can look for that soon and cool. you can look at my fan page and I'll, I guess, update it.
Great.
There's only two pictures up. I don't know how to do it. But yeah,
cool.
That's where you can find me.
Wonderful.
Oh, and I perform all over LA. I usually tweet about it and I tour. So look. For them tweets.
Look for those tweets.
Look for the
hey,
tweets.
Hey, speaking of tweets, you can follow us on Twitter at BechtelCast. You can email us at thebechtelcast@gmail.com.
Anytime you're drinking a Mike's Hard, let us know.
Let us know. Also, you can donate money to us. We have some oh. production costs.
Oh.
And we gotta survive. We gotta keep
we
going.
PayPal.
With hit us up on PayPal, donate $1, $2, $3, $3,000.
Thanks to your generosity, I was able to pay my student loans this month.
Really?
To be clear, they did not pay my student loans, but because we didn't need to absorb the cost of the podcast this month, I could pay my student loans.
Oh, yeah, keep income. Giving them money.
Yeah.
So go to paypal.me/Bechtelcast and you can throw us a few dollars. That would be great. We'd so appreciate it. Again, Nicole, thanks for being here. It's been
thanks
a blast.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great time. And men, don't ghost on women.
No, don't. Call us back.
Call us back.
Please. Call us back. But also feel free to die.
Yeah, just die as long as you're going to leave us some money.
Yeah. All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.